going out, Harinam Sankirtan, 6 days a week for 10 hours every day, how you would feel. So I remember when Prabhupada would chant Jai Radha Madhava, because we were so used to kirtan, it was just get up, you know, because we were so used to dancing, we just get up and dance. You could try it sometime. See if it works for you. So are we on text 38, is that correct? Are we at chapter 28, text 38? Is that correct? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Tapasa. By austerity.
By
By education.
By education.
Papa.
Burned up.
Kashayaha.
Kashayaha.
All dirty things.
All dirty things.
Niyamai.
Niyamai.
By regulative principles.
By regulative principles.
Niyamai. By self-control. Yuj, he fixed.
Brahmani,
in spiritual realization.
Atmanam,
his self.
Vijita,
completely controlled.
Aksha,
senses.
Anila,
life.
Ashayaha,
consciousness.
Consciousness.
By worshipping, executing austerities, and following the regulative principles, King Mayadwaja conquered his senses, his life, and his consciousness. Thus he fixed everything on the central point of the Supreme Brahman, Brahman, Krishna. Purport. Whenever the word Brahman appears, the impersonalists take this to mean the impersonal effulgence, the Brahma Jyoti. Actually, however, Parabrahman, the Supreme Brahman, is Krishna, Vasudeva. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Vasudeva extends everywhere as the impersonal Brahman. One cannot fix one's mind upon an impersonal something. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, verse 5, therefore says, Klesho dikataraste sham avyaktasakta chetasam. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord, advancement is very troublesome. Even for those attached to the personal feature, advancement is not easy. Not always easy. Consequently, when it is said herein that King Malayadwaja fixed his mind on Brahman, Brahman means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Prabhupada once said something, maybe no, someone knows exactly, something to the effect that even though you're all born as atheists, or you're all atheists, or you're all something, there is actually a Krishna. Does anyone know the exact quote? In other words, it's like Prabhupada's introducing us to Krishna. We're like, yeah, right. And Prabhupada's saying, no, there actually is a Krishna. You don't believe it. Maybe because you have this impersonal atheistic tendency. So even we, Prabhupada speaking to us, even we sometimes have some issues with the person Krishna. And what's the issue? What's the issue we have with this person? What's the big one? He's the enjoyer. And what's the second half of the sentence? He's the only enjoyer. Too bad, folks. He's the only enjoyer. But, then there's a but after that, right? But, that's not fair. Why does he have to be the only enjoyer? And why do I have to do what he wants? So this is the problem. We did something once in one workshop. Well, we did a couple things. I forget exactly what it was of the couple things, but it was an exercise in which you basically were with Krishna and you're visualizing that Krishna's there. And you're chanting to Krishna. And he's sitting in front of you. And some devotees had a really difficult time with this person named Krishna in front of them. They felt very uncomfortable and awkward. And some of them said it because there's this person, God, but he's a person and he has desires, and I've been ignoring those desires as long as I can remember. And it was very awkward to sit in front of a person who I've been trying to avoid in some way, or compete with in some way. Interesting. Think about it. Imagine Krishna were sitting in front of you right now. You'd think, oh yes, it'd be so nice. This is the person that you're competing with, or trying to compete with for so many lifetimes. The person you've turned your back on. Now he's sitting in front of you. When Gop Kumar went back to Godhead, and he first met Krishna, Krishna said, I've been waiting for you. How would that make you feel? After a zillion lifetimes, Krishna says, basically, what took you so long? What was so important? What were you doing down there that was so important? Well, what are you going to say? Ultimately, you can say, well, I was busy trying to be you, but, you know, I finally got the message. You know, it just took like 40 billion lifetimes. That's basically what I was busy doing. And Krishna's waiting. Krishna's Rasaraj, so he's waiting for a relationship. Right? Now, many devotees, when you discuss this, the first thing that comes to their mind is, why Krishna would care anything about me? I'm just hanging out here, wasting time. And there's Krishna, and Mahatma saying, Krishna's waiting for us. I don't believe it. He's not waiting for me. He doesn't even care about me. He probably doesn't even know my name. He probably doesn't even know where I live. He couldn't care. And even if he does, what does he care? It's not like that. How do we know that? If that's actually true, why would Krishna send so many of his pure devotees, and particularly send Prabhupada, to fetch us? Why? Because he cares. You know, some people ask me, how did you become a devotee? And it's very interesting how I became a devotee, because I really didn't do anything. Krishna fetched me. When I was in high school, I used to see devotees chanting japa in my neighborhood. The first temple in Los Angeles was about 7 blocks from where I grew up. And then I went away to college, and the temple was 7 blocks from where I lived. I live farther away from this temple than I did when I was a kid in my own neighborhood from the Los Angeles temple. And when I went to college, the devotees were teaching Bhagavad Gita as an accredited class sponsored by the university, 4 units as a philosophy class. That's a good class to take. If the Hare Krishnas were teaching a class, would you take it? Because you figure, I don't have to go to class, right? It's something bogus, you know, they're teaching a class, getting credit for it. There were 500 students signed up for that class. There were 3 left at the end of the 10 weeks. If they started hearing the philosophy and they couldn't deal with it. You're suffering, they're all leaving. Anyway, when people ask me how I became a devotee, I reflect there was a red carpet laid out for me. I didn't have to do anything. It was like, it was all there. On the campus that I'm going to school, devotees are chanting 8 hours a day, every day. It was hard to avoid. So when I look back at that, I think, yes, Krishna, he wants me to go back to Godhead. He rolled the red carpet out. I went into a bookstore at the university, and I walked around, and there was a Bhagavad Gita on the shelf. And this little voice said, read that book. I said, what's that book? I don't even know what it is. Read it. And I walked out, and I didn't get it. And then on campus, Ridainanda Maharaj, who was Bhakta Howard, had a table and a sign that said, Bhagavad Gita, philosophy class, 4 units. I said, okay. That's the Bhagavad Gita I got. How did all that happen? Krishna. And I think Sureshwar tells the story. He went to the temple in Boston, and it was snowing, and someone took his shoes, so he couldn't leave. And he just stayed. You can ask him when he comes. That's what I remember. We used to travel together, so. And I'm sure you all have your stories. So Giriraj Swami tells a story, very nice story. I think some of you may have heard this from me before. But for those of you who haven't heard, and those with bad memories, I will tell it. And those of you who remember, well, you can hear it again. It's very sweet. One devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, why would Krishna care about me. He has so many devotees. You ever, you know, I mean, Krishna has the gopis and the gopas, and the elderly gopis. Why would he care about us? So Prabhupada said, if you cut your finger very severely, do you go to the doctor and tell him, just let the finger fall off, no problem, I have 9 more fingers? You do that? Anybody do that? Raise your hand if you do that. Nobody will do that. So similarly, Prabhupada said, similarly, Krishna, he doesn't think, oh, here's one devotee, or here's one living entity. Who cares about them? I have so many more. He cares about every one of them. Isn't that interesting? So Krishna cares about you. Your mother may not have cared about you. Your father may not have cared about you. Your sister or brother, but Krishna cares. One time Rabindasarup Prabhu said, he said, it's impossible for Krishna not to love us. He can't, he said, he cannot not love us because he's the Father. So it's impossible. He can't not do it. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that every living being has a unique relationship with Krishna and therefore gives Krishna a unique taste. So each one of you sitting here and each one of you out on the internet, if the internet is, so there you are. And each one of you, all of us, we can give unique pleasure to Krishna that the person next to you can't give. Did you know that? Isn't that interesting? So we could think, okay, each one of us, in our love of Krishna, gives him unique pleasure. And he wants to relish that pleasure with each one of us. So what are we waiting for? Still competing, right? If we're pious, we let Krishna help us compete with him. Right? We bring him in. We're in the center of the universe. We'll bring Krishna into the center and say, can you help me? Remain in the center. I'll offer you puja, I'll give some money. So then we bring Krishna in and he helps us. But love is we get out of the center. Krishna's in the center. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says something also interesting. Just as there's a special taste that each living entity can offer Krishna, Krishna has a special taste to offer each living entity. So it's perfect, right? So we each have a special place. And a special relationship. And Krishna's Rasaraj. So that's what Krishna likes to do. He likes to exchange rasa. That's actually all he does. If you think about it, that's all he's doing, right? What else is he doing? You say, no, he's killing demons, but why? So we can become more attached to him, right? No other reason. Of course, he likes to do it. But it gives us, it churns the ocean of rasa. So now, there was one philosopher who made an interesting point. And his observation was, we, or people, maybe not us, but people don't, they don't like this idea of a personal God. And the reason they don't like it is because people have desires. You know, just like you're married and your husband says, I want you to cook this. And you're thinking, I'm tired, I don't want to cook it. Or your wife says, I need you to do this. And you're thinking, oh, I don't want to do that. What if your wife or husband was an impersonal Brahman and they had no desire? You wouldn't have to cook anything. They never tell you what to do. It'd be like no conflict at all. Honey, why don't you just become Brahman and leave me alone? Think about it. So the philosopher said, if God is not a person, then everything's good because he won't demand anything. there's no, for no person means no personal desires, nothing to demand. So you're good to go. You could kind of do whatever you want, because there's no, don't do this, do this. You just figure, you know, just make it up as you go along, whatever feels right, and you can call that spiritual, because you're not dealing with the person. But when you deal with the person has desire. He makes demands. Krishna says, watch out. Krishna says the S word. You know what the S word is? Surrender. Prabhu, I'll do any one. One disciple said, I'll do to his girl, I'll do you anything you want, but just don't ask anything. I'll surrender, just don't ask me to surrender. You know, the S word, surrender. Whoa, I'll do anything but that. I did a statistical survey. Devotees are afraid of surrender. I can verify this. Devotees are afraid to surrender to Krishna. How do I know this? Because I asked them. In my japa workshop, I asked them, what are you afraid of? If you fully surrender to Krishna, what are you afraid of? Everybody has long lists. This is an exercise we do. They write it down, what they're afraid of. Because I tell them, how can you chant the holy name if you're afraid of the result of the holy of chanting? The result of chanting is surrender. And now you're saying you're afraid to surrender. It's like going into a restaurant and you're already full. Why would you do that? So I said, I asked the devotees, is this true? And they say, yes, it's true. You know, I know that the Maha Mantra works. But in the back of my mind, maybe when I'm 73, I'll be ready. But I don't know about now. As St. Augustine said, oh Lord, please give me celibacy, but not just yet. Oh Krishna, please remove this desire, but not that one. Is that a good prayer? But that goes on in the mind. So, maybe in Mayapur you're all surrendered, I don't know. But in other places, devotees come up with things that they're afraid of. Like, well, if I fully surrender to Krishna, maybe he'll send me to Siberia to open a temple. You have any people here from Siberia? Anyone been to Siberia? Anyone want to go to Siberia? Chanana Maharaj is very happy to be in Siberia. Because the preaching is, as Prabhupada said, I'd rather preach in the snow of Russia than eat mangoes in Hawaii. Because he was offered a ticket to Hawaii on his way to Russia, and he said, and they said, it's the mango season. And he said, preaching in Russia in the snow is sweet. We got a telepathic message that you're fully surrendered. This actually happened to me. I'll tell you the story. It happened to me. It did. It's true. I'll tell you what happened. And this will really scare all of those, all of you who are thinking, I don't want to go to Siberia or any place like it. Last March, I was chanting my rounds in the temple. And I had been temple president four times. That was four times too many. So I was like, I had it with temple president life. I said, that's it. I never want to do this. It's not me. It's not my nature. And so for years, I've just kind of would avoid any management position. It just, you know, just kind of like, just consciously tell Krishna, Krishna, I'll do anything but. I think we all probably do this a little bit, right? Krishna, I'll fully surrender, but you know, I don't like management, so just keep that in mind, you know, when the fully surrender part comes. You know. So I was chanting around and I said, I'm sick of this conditional devotional service. I'm just, forget it. I was just, whatever you want, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Whatever you want, that's it, I'll do it. Next day, one GBC comes and said, we were having a meeting. We decided you should go to Israel. I said, Krishna, that was fast. It was a definite connection because I had put a block in front of myself. I had put a block between me and Krishna. This is what I'll do. This is what I won't do. It was very clear. I was very conscious of it. I pulled the block down. Next day, it might have been the same day, but that would be an exaggeration because I can't remember exactly. It would be a better story if it was the same day, but I don't think it was more than one day, what I remember, maximum two. It would happen right away. And when they asked me, immediately I knew. I said, oh my God, this really works. But the good news is, I did go to Israel. And it was ecstatic. And I went back again. And actually, when I went there, I could see that interesting thing happened. That for 8 years, I had been studying. I've been studying, you could say, counseling, psychology, and looking at Krishna consciousness more from a psychological perspective. And it was everything, all the skills I gained were fully utilized when I was in Israel. Completely. Like, if I didn't have those skills, I don't think I would have been able to help that much. But because I had those skills, it was like a perfect situation for me. So Krishna knew. He put me there. Perfect. So, I have to tell you a very nice story. You're going to love this story. It's so sweet. Would you like to hear it? This, all of you who are teachers, this one man, he taught... Well, he was actually teaching marketing. He said, if you want people to listen, talk about what you're going to say for 10 minutes before you say it and glorify what you're going to say. This is amazing. You won't believe this story I'm going to tell you. It's like I've never heard anything like it. It's just, you want to hear it? Anyway, if your audience is falling asleep, just use this trick. It'll wake them up. Nah, I'll tell you next time. Okay. So... We asked the devotees, it was a small workshop, we asked the devotees, if I fully surrender to Krishna, what if? And they made their what if list, and there were many what ifs. One what if was my husband takes sannyas. Like if I surrender to Krishna, Krishna knows I'm completely surrendered, he'll take away my husband. Which is not a bad idea if you don't like him, but... You know, most women are not ready yet. Which reminds me of the story. One grihastha convinced Prabhupada to take sannyas and told Prabhupada that his wife was okay with it. Of course, he never asked his wife. The news got to her and she came flying from, I think, Mayapur to Vrindavan complaining to Prabhupada. She was so upset. She was so frustrated. She said, Prabhupada, I can't take this. She said, I hate everyone. I hate everything. She was completely frustrated. The Prabhupada said, oh, very good. You're making spiritual advancement. Anyway, so that was a side, that was a extra preparation on the plate. That was a side dish. Had nothing to do with what we're talking about. But we were mentioning the fear. So one woman said, maybe my husband will take sannyas. Another devotee said, Krishna will take my money. Another devotee said, but I have this service I'm attached to. What if Krishna will love? He'll take the service away. I'll give it to somebody else. You know, all these things. So then I said, so then I told the devotees, I said, this is what you do. You give your list to the devotee next to you. And the devotee next to you will read the list back to you as if it's his list. And you preach to that devotee, why this is all crazy. So they had to preach to the devotee from their own list. So the girl who said, my husband's going to take sannyas, she had to preach to the person. So the person says, oh, if I surrender to Krishna, what if my husband takes sannyas? And then you preach. He'll never take sannyas. That bum, don't worry about it. We have to preach something. Or, you know, what if he takes sannyas? It's Krishna's mercy. It'll be my service to help him. Yeah. So For every argument we had, the devotees would have to preach to the person as if it were the person's argument, but it was actually their argument. So then I said at the end, I said, "What did you realize?" Everybody said, "I realized these were all creations of my mind. This is all stupid fears." And so I'd say, "Okay, let's chant japa now. You know, let's just kind of get over it and just chant the holy name and surrender. You know, just chant without these fears." So after we chanted, I asked, "Would anyone like to share?" And this one devotee said something amazing, and this is what I wanted to tell you. She had a picture of Krishna sitting by the Jamuna playing his flute. You know Krishna is a young boy, he's kind of beautiful. You know, you've seen him before. Rupa Goswami says, don't see him if you're attached to anything in this world, don't go see him because he's really beautiful. And once you see him, like, that's it. Everything else, you know, it's not going to look beautiful anymore. You're going to walk home, you know, you're look at your flat and you're going to look at everything and go, why do I have all this? Once you see Krishna, what am I doing? So she shared that she was chanting and she was looking at this picture of Krishna. And she was thinking in her mind, how could this blue boy, this beautiful blue boy, ever do anything to hurt me? Isn't that sweet? Because what we realized with all these fears of surrender, we were actually afraid of Krishna, that he was going to do something to hurt me, like send me to Siberia, when I'd rather be sent to Hawaii. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hawaii, Hawaii. You know that mantra. Not Siberia, Siberia. So we were discovering through this exercise that many of us, probably all of us, something in our mind at some point says surrender and pain. There's something there, surrender and pain. You know, fear. Krishna, if I surrender to you, you're going to send me, you're going to make me do something that's going to cause me pain. I'm not going to be happy. Does that make sense? If you think about it, just like Prabhupada, when he had the dream, his spiritual master came to him to take sannyas, asking him to take sannyas. And Prabhupada said, I was horrified of the prospect of having to leave everything. You might say, well, you know, what's so bad about sannyas? You get servants, mahaprasad, you know, this, that, and the next thing. But when Prabhupada was, you know, when Bhakti Siddhanta was asking to take sannyas, the Gaudiya Math sannyas was not exactly like that. It was very, it was a big thing. It was very, very austere. Very, very, you know, this is it. You're giving up everything. It's one thing, you know, that you consciously want to give it up, but so like that, there's a fear. How can I do this? Krishna's asking me to do something that I can't do. There's this fear. So Prabhupada came here, I believe it was Nandan Acharya, wasn't it? And he was chanting japa before he had to come to America, and he was crying. And Pujari said, why? And he said, because I feel unqualified. I've been given an order I feel unqualified to do. So there's that fear. Even if you're surrendered, there's still this fear. How will I do it? But one of the things that we realize, at least for us, not for Prabhupada, but for us, is that a very interesting thing comes out of this whole idea. We feel like this surrender, I don't know. Maybe there'll be some pain. And then we realize, by discussing this, we realize that Krishna never causes pain to his devotee. If Krishna does something which is so-called difficult, it's only to bring us closer. And when we come closer to Krishna, it's not painful. What's painful is what? Being further away, right? So if Krishna has to put a little pin in your back to push you closer to him, that's going to be a lot less painful than no pin in your back being far away, right? Does that make sense? So when we surrender and Krishna pushes us, he's just bringing us closer. That's all he's doing. So we shouldn't be afraid to come closer, should we? Not in theory, we shouldn't. If we see surrender as Krishna bringing us closer. Prabhupada was asked, what is surrender? Prabhupada said, surrender means Krishna will protect you and Krishna will maintain you. That's it. That's the definition of surrender. Wow. So then, one thing we discovered, very interesting in the workshop, all these fears were coming out about surrender and Krishna will do something to hurt me and make my life difficult. And then we realized, who makes our life difficult? You know that, you know when you brush your teeth every morning? You know that person you see in the mirror? That's the one that makes your life difficult, not Krishna. Isn't that an interesting realization? If I surrender to Krishna, he'll make my life difficult. No. No. This guy here, he's the one who makes this life difficult. That's it. By not surrendering. I was thinking the other day, I was in Nasik, and we were the verse had something to deal with anarthas. So we're talking about anarthas. And I was thinking, every anartha is like a boil. And when you get rid of each anartha, it's like one boil just left. You go, oh, I feel so much better now. And the next anartha goes, oh, I feel so much better. And the next one goes. And we feel lighter and happier. Have you noticed that? They just like give up some anartha. Immediately you feel happy. Isn't it? And every anartha we maintain, and heavy, miserable. Oh. Oh, how you doing, Prabhupada? Oh, my mind. I got this anartha, I just can't get rid of it. How are you doing? Great, Prabhupada, I got so many anarthas, I'm blissful. No, it's not like that. It's like, how are you doing? Blissful, ecstatic kirtan, I just surrendered in that kirtan, I feel so happy. That's just the reality. And who maintains the anarthas? We do. Why? Because we find some value there. Why do you maintain anything? Just like in America, we have garages. They're supposed to be for cars, but after a while, the car won't fit in there because you have so many things that take up space in your house that you don't want anymore. You put them in your garage, right? Right, Gunagimya? And what?
Don't talk about
it. I've been to his garage many times. He has a lot of tools in his garage. And when your garage fills up, you rent a space outside. They're called storage spaces. So these are like anarthas, and there's a rule to say, well, if you don't use it for 1 year, you probably don't need it. Just get rid of it or sell it. But then people think, well, it's only 1 year. I might need it next year. So why do we hold on to anarthas? Prabhupada, why don't you just let the anarthas go? Well, I might need them. Yeah, I mean, like, what if I blew? Then what am I going to do? I don't have any anarthas. How am I going to enjoy? I have to keep the anarthas alive and well for my blooping fund. You know? But actually think about it. Why do we maintain anarthas? They have some value for us. So, but actually, if we give them up, we feel very, very blissful, very, very happy, very inspired. Because it's bringing us closer to Krishna. It's giving us rasa. Krishna wants to give us some taste. Krishna, it's like your mother says, I have a cookie for you, but eat your spinach first. Then I'll give you the cookie. And Krishna says, I have some rasa for you. But those anarthas, you know, get rid of those first, and then I'll give this to you. So by holding on to the anartha, we prevent the rasa. Is it? So who's hurting us? Krishna or ourselves? somehow we're afraid, there's a little fear to get too close. You know, what if I surrender? If I surrender, what if? It's a big what if. The real answer is, what if? The real thing is, if I don't surrender, what if? Right? Of course, Gandhagamya and Jananda Maharaj and others, disciples of Prabhupada, Vagatmika can say, we have a list, but that list grew after Prabhupada left. It was, I don't know if we had a list when Prabhupada... I mean, when you were in front of Prabhupada, if you had a list, it just dissolved instantaneously, didn't it? It's kind of... I mean, you just saw Prabhupada, and it was like, what happened to my list? Where did I put it? No, you weren't even looking for the list. It was gone. You didn't want it. There was no question. Surrender is spontaneous. It's not mental. And, when devotees are, I'm trying to work this out, trying to work that, it's not there, it's here. That's where it happens. And when we saw Prabhupada, it was all here. One devotee heard Prabhupada lecture, just to show you how it was in his heart. It was 1968, he heard Prabhupada lecture. When Prabhupada first came, his accent was difficult for us to understand, even for new people coming from the West. Even now, when they hear Prabhupada's lectures, even in the later days, it's hard for them to understand. So this devotee, he heard the whole lecture, and he went home. His friend said, how was the lecture? He said, I didn't understand one word. I couldn't understand the accent. But I knew that every word he spoke was true. That's it. It's hard. And he became a devotee. Surrender is sweet. It's blissful. Sweet surrender. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, if you want to ask questions, if you want to leave, please leave. If you want to ask questions, make comments, please. Yes, Maharaj.
Thank you very much, Mahamudu.
You're welcome.
Hare Krishna. regarding surrender, can you elucidate a little bit? Sometimes in self, let's say, experience, intelligence, initiative also play their part, and a line of surrender when you're asked to do something, or most of us,
right.
Can you expand a little bit on that? Because, sometimes...
You're saying that surrender shouldn't mean lack of intelligence?
Yeah, we're just doing whatever you're
surrender
told.
Your intelligence. We've
probably had a lot of experience like that. Sometimes you have to discriminate.
Don't do everything your authorities ask you. Because they might be asking you to do the wrong thing. So use your intelligence. No, we have to balance that a little bit. It's true, but sometimes I think the phrase you want is surrender doesn't mean to surrender your intelligence. Right? But it means... the thing is also, I want to expand upon this because I think it's important for devotees to understand that Prabhupada was not a micromanager and not a controller. Prabhupada was a visionary, would give us vision, and then he would say, do it. Sometimes you'd want Prabhupada to tell you how to do it, but that wasn't generally how he did it. Maybe in India he'd have to do that, because we didn't know how to do things in India. But in the West, it was an idea. Distribute my books. Open temples. Do this, do that. Well, how do we do it? Krishna will give you intelligence. So... part of that process of surrender was sometimes there was no detailed guidance and it was just, Krishna, help me. As I remember, the cooking classes that we had in the early days of the movement went like this. Prabhu, we need you to cook for the deities, but I don't know how to cook. Just go in the temple, just go in the kitchen, offer dandavats on the floor, and begin cooking. That was the cooking class. So, at many times, Prabhupada would write devotees responding to their descriptions of the service they're doing, and he would say, I could see Krishna's giving you intelligence how to do this. So I think it's a very good point that sometimes Krishna gives us intelligence, or we have very strong gut feelings about something being right or wrong, and we turn them off because somebody above us, or we heard a class, or something is making us think we shouldn't rely on our intelligence, and that would be surrender, when actually sometimes inside we're feeling this is the wrong thing to do, and we need to discuss this. Is that what you're getting at, that idea? That this is an interesting point because it brings up a whole other topic. When you ask a devotee, well, how do you feel about this? And sometimes the devotee will say, well, how am I supposed to feel? Disconnected from their own feeling about something. Because we have so much knowledge and we get so much guidance, we should definitely have clear feelings about things. And sometimes when things are wrong, you can feel it, right? You ever been in a temple and something's wrong? Actually, I won't tell you where I went, but about a month ago, I walked into a temple, and in about 45 seconds, I knew a lot was wrong. I could feel it immediately. Just walked onto the property, and I looked around and said, something's wrong here. Sometimes you can just feel it. And so sometimes we have to go with that and say, okay. One time, Prabhupada came to Los Angeles, and he asked the head pujari, are Rupa, meaning Dwarkadish, happy? And she said, I don't know. And Prabhupada said, you should know. I don't know. I'm sure you've gone to some temples and kind of felt there was something wrong just by seeing the deity. Have you? You don't want to admit it, but you know. So sometimes we have to go with our feelings and say, something's wrong. Story. Nobody knows this story. This is a reward for all of you who are staying. The story is told by a godbrother. It was told for the Lilamrita, and the person writing the Lilamrita didn't believe the story. You want to hear it? He didn't even believe it. And the devotee who told it swears it's true. This devotee is in the LA temple room, and Prabhupada comes, and the devotee is up by the front of the altar. And as soon as Prabhupada comes, the whole temple room fills with devotees. There's no room. He can't move. And he's pushed right up against Prabhupada, this close. For those of you listening and not seeing, this close means like an inch away. And he's the same height as Prabhupada. And he's next to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's talking to Rukmini Dwarkadish. And Prabhupada's asking questions. Are they taking care of you? But then for 10 seconds, there's silence. And Prabhupada says, oh, very nice. Whoa. Prabhupada says, are they dressing you nicely? 10 seconds. Prabhupada says, very good. Are they feeding you nicely? 10 seconds. He doesn't hear anything. Prabhupada says, oh, that's very good. Prabhupada sits on his Vyasasana, sits down and says, I can see that you're taking very nice care of the deities. So, we may not be able to talk, but sometimes you can just feel something is right or feel something is wrong. And maybe surrender means going this way, but you feel it's not the right thing. Sometimes you have to just go with your gut, your intelligence, and talk to somebody and say, I don't think this is right. Now, we could probably say, you will be in situations like that at some point in your life if you stay in the Hare Krishna movement long enough. What do you think, Kama Gyama? Is that true?
Actually, we're not afraid of surrendering to Krishna. We're afraid of surrendering to the ISKCON authority.
But sometimes we have good reason to be afraid. That's the problem.
Right.
Sometimes we have good reason to be afraid.
But when you say, let's talk about this, you will go to the authority, you know, excuse me for a little later. Or Prabhu, just do what I tell you. Or, you know, there's a whole list of, they have a whole list of responses to that. So how do you compete, how do you deal with that?
When the authority doesn't want to talk?
Well, just like you went into a temple and you found that things were wrong. You know, you sensed that things were wrong. What did you do?
Cried. I said, what the H is going on here? And fortunately, everybody knew that there was a lot wrong here. It was so obvious, everybody knew it. And I made a mistake. I made a big mistake. I surrendered. I was actually the president of this temple at one point, so I was very concerned about it. And I told the devotees, I said, I'll come back and help. And they're like booking my ticket to come back in January right now. And it snows there. Not Siberia, but it snows there. And it's a very difficult situation. Sometimes you have to do that. You just have to, like, do something, I think. I think sometimes when things aren't the way they should be, I think we just have to do something, keep talking about it, talking to different people. I think what, for many of us, especially for Prabhupada disciples, if something's going wrong, there's a feeling inside that it's wrong to allow it to go on that way without us doing something. Even though we know, as soon as we say it, you know, arrows are going to be thrown at us. I was just somewhere, I can't remember where, but some devotee approached me and he said, you have to say something. This is Prabhupada's temple and you're his disciple, you have to say something. I can't remember, but it struck a chord in me. I said, yes, it's true. So... But I think everybody can feel that way, don't you? Even if you're not a disciple of Prabhupada? Of course, it depends on your position.
Well, we may not all be Prabhupada disciples, obviously, and we also don't... Being a Prabhupada disciple doesn't really make that much difference, especially if there's another guru there who is prominent and so
right.
forth, and he's not paying any attention to it. So you just become a noise if you speak up. So how do devotees deal with that, the... Okay, I'll be a martyr syndrome. I'll do that. I'll go in and make the noise.
Sounds like this is going to be a class. We're going to create a revolution in this class. Everyone's going to go out, talk to the authorities. You stop doing that.
If I went somewhere and started fault finding or talked with some people on the side, no one's going to book my ticket to come back. You're in a position of having these skills, which is very nice.
I think it goes to this point. You're in a situation, and if you sense very strongly this is not what Prabhupada wants, I think the first thing is to think, okay, we need to do something. I may not be the one to do it, but how we... I think it's wrong. You know, it's the sin of omission. If there's anything you can possibly do and you don't do anything, and then... there's a story some devotee told me. They were traveling in India... And they went to some temple. Maybe someone knows the story. It's a Jamuna story. They went to some temple and something was wrong. And they just showed up and Prabhupada turned to Jamuna and said, how could you have allowed this to go on? And she'd never even been there before. Does anybody know this story? Anyone heard this story? Amazing story. Prabhupada said, how did you allow this to go on? Nanda Kumar, who was Prabhupada's servant, told me a story that in Los Angeles, Prabhupada was walking through the Didi kitchen and there were paintings on the floor because it was the home of the art department. And you should not put Krishna on the floor. And so Prabhupada put his cane down. Who has put this painting on the floor? He was very upset. And Nanda Kumar said, I don't know, Prabhupada. It's not my responsibility because he's... Not a good thing to tell Prabhupada, unless you want to be chastised. It is to your responsibility. So I think, at least the starting point of answering your question is I think we all have to be responsible if we see something bad, because we could just imagine, if we had to face Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, you knew this was going on and you didn't tell anybody.
Say, but Prabhupada, I knew if I told the authority, they wouldn't believe me or this or that. I mean, how could we face Prabhupada and say, I didn't do anything. Something. Tell somebody. We have to do something. Now, how to do it, that's a whole other topic. And I think for us as individuals, something may be very, very bad, but we cannot come in from the point of envy, because then nobody's going to listen to us. But if we come in from the point of, this is Prabhupada's movement and I'm concerned. Second thing, which is very important, we have to make sure if that concern is really a concern, and it's not just me being envious, because sometimes it is, you know, like our concern is actually, I'm just envious, and I need to talk to some other devotees to determine, am I just envious or is this a problem? And actually, I did this yesterday, because I got very concerned about something, and I spoke to my godbrother, and he showed me it's not a concern. It was just, he didn't tell me it was my envy, but I felt it was. So that was very purifying. Because I was about to talk to GBC, and I said, this is bothering me, it's wrong, we need to stop this. And he said, no, it's not a problem. And he explained why. So that was very good. So we have to know it, we have to be sure it's a problem and it's not just envy. And I think if it's really a problem, it's going to communicate with somebody, somewhere. You look like you've been beaten down a few times, trying this. Yeah, I know you have, because, yeah, you've had some, you know, we've all had some hard times. And
Some of us are not qualified.
Yeah.
Are not qualified to take on that kind of leadership.
Right.
And it's very difficult when we're faced with those problems.
Right.
So we, you know, we surrender. Okay, Krishna, you handle this.
Right.
Because it's beyond my scope.
All right. I can say two things. When I was here last year, some ladies met me and said, we have some concerns, but we'd like you to present it because they won't listen to us. So that was a valuable way. And then another thing I could say, the last thing you said is also true, because there were times in ISKCON where things were so off and nobody could do anything. And everybody knew only Krishna can deal with this. Like, we tried. And Krishna did deal with it.
At those times, I know some of those times, what happens is people exit.
Yeah.
There's an exodus from that place, and then the problem becomes more and more apparent.
Yeah. Or sometimes the person creating the problem exits.
But that's not, now we're becoming, that, at that time we were brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, you know, or young householders without families and so forth, and it was much easier to take a bus or a plane. So now, devotees are established. You know, they're in their 40s and 50s, and they have children and so forth. It's not so easy to make that exit. So the requirement of getting involved is pretty intense.
Yeah, it's true. And we all have different natures, but you may be able to get other people involved who maybe can do something, who have that nature, out of your concern. But I think it's important that we don't give up our concern. This is such an important point, because I think what you're saying is, because you've expressed concerns and you were beaten down before, or you were made to feel that you're wrong or you're not surrendered or whatever. So it's like suppresses you in the future from doing that. But I don't think we should. I think if something is wrong, I think it's our obligation to bring it to the attention of somebody if we can't do it ourselves directly. I think that story of Jamuna tells it all. How did you allow this to go on? Like, we all have some responsibility. So, but how to do it? Some situations, you actually can't do anything. You'll talk to people and they'll say, yeah, we tried, but so-and-so is like this. And if he goes, the whole project will fall down. So this is better than him not being here. And you just go, okay. What I personally do, I can just say what I personally do. I do my best to understand what Prabhupada wants, and I preach that everywhere I go. So sometimes I'm not preaching against something, I'm preaching proactively to people who will listen, and hopefully in their areas where they have influence, they will understand what is right and what is wrong, what is more appropriate and less appropriate, and I can contribute that way. So sometimes your contribution may be just to preach to a new person, that, you know, or a new young devotee who's taken leadership, and say, you're a leader, don't ever do this, this is such a problem. So you know, you've done something to help a new person not make the mistakes that we've made. That's, you know, that's part of the solution, isn't it? I think, you know, sometimes that's all you can do.
No, you're right. Things improve by increments. They don't. Revolutions generally are devastation. You know.
Okay, so now I'm going to make a revolutionary statement. This could excite a revolution in Mayapur, but I'll say it anyway. Martin Luther said this. He said, everything that Adolf Hitler did was legal. And everything that the British did when they came to America to establish America was illegal. Have you ever heard that statement? Because Martin Luther, he was a civil rights activist, so he was pushing people to do something illegal, to go against the government. But he was making the point that many great things happened that were illegal, and many bad things were done legally. Because he was a revolutionary, and he wanted to create a revolution. So I don't mean to create a revolution, but sometimes you may have to step on a few toes to correct a problem. But maybe we have to do that sometimes. I mean, it's just, these are realities. I mean, you know, gurus make mistakes. You know, the GBC tries to control them, and they can't. My personal opinion is the best people to control them are their disciples. They have the most control. Or their wives, if they're married. The people who have the most influence, the most affection, have the most control. You can go to a disciple and say, tell your Guru Maharaj not to do this. He'll listen to you. He respects you. He's actually doing something that's bad. Yes.
Sometimes it's the guru's wife that's the problem. Yeah. I mean, I've heard of situations like that. I had a correspondence with someone who had a problem like that. And she was just being, you know, abused. At any rate, that's another issue.
I think the answer is, you go on with your service. I think the idea is, as Prabhupada would say, obey now, do what they say for now, and then if you're just satisfied, take it. You know, don't just like jump off the ship, say, I'm not going to drive the ship anymore, and the ship crashes. You do your service, but you take it. You do something. You try to do what you can to contest it or improve it. I think that's the main. Shananda Marsh, you want to say something? Thank you for the question. It's a very good point, which I forgot to mention. Okay. Does anyone else have anything? Is the revolution ready to begin? We're going to now go out and correct every problem we see in Mayapur. They'll never let me give class again. Anyway, it was worth it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.